and welcome to the Arrow Video Podcast with Sam and Dan. I'm Sam Ashurst, I'm a writer, I'm a director, and I'm a podcast superintendent.
Hi everyone, I'm Shay Mossifin. I'm a VHS distributor, a movie nerd, and a podcast lady.
That's right. And before we do anything else, I must apologize for not knowing that Rockstar made a Warriors video game. Thank you to everyone who pointed that out to me, whether you did it in a message on Instagram, Facebook, or by simply Xing me a screen grab of the box art. I hear you. I was wrong, and I'm truly sorry. I promise to never mention video games again. It's not an area I understand. But yeah, there really should have been a Conan video game, right? I can't believe that doesn't exist. Like, no board games, no role-playing games, strategy games, video games, nothing, ever. Someone should really get on that. Anyway.
Oh my God. Is this where I intervene? And I guess like I was supposed to last time.
I'm making a joke, but I am honestly sorry. I fucked up.
Well, for real, we actually looked up some of the footage of the playthrough of the PS2 game of the Warriors. It's awesome.
It looks amazing and the music is fantastic, and I can see why this was a pivotal game for a lot of people, especially fans of the movie. So we're gonna head to eBay and get a PS2 and a copy of the game.
The PS2 is gonna be cheaper than the game though.
Yes, from our early research we found one for $80. But that's kind of the average cost of a game these days. But anyway, this is the Arrow Video Podcast, not the Arrow Video Game Podcast, and we are here to talk about Conan the Barbarian. Super excited to discuss this with you, Shay, because this is a film that you watched many times growing up. What is it about Conan the Barbarian that fascinated you so much, do you think?
I guess Conan is to the sword and sorcery genre what Halloween is to slashers. And
oh, wow.
Basically, yeah. Schwarzenegger was the action star of the decade, and undoubtedly thanks to Conan. And I really loved how hyper-masculinized he is, and a lot of the male characters are just as scantily clad as the women. But in the peplum and sword and sandal genre, before they kicked off their sandals and put on the magic wizard boots, basically, there's a lot of saving the female characters, throwing them over their shoulder and running off into the sunset.
Yeah.
And Conan didn't really have that. It was a totally different approach. And I was really fascinated with Thulsa Doom and with the Valeria character, with the set pieces, with the fantasy element of everything. I really loved the soundtrack. It was so stirring, operatic.
The score's incredible.
It's amazing. Yeah. So yeah, a lot of it just really spoke to me.
Yeah.
You know, as a young kid, I didn't know people could have bodies like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right. Well, what's interesting is that Conan the Barbarian, the movie, came into existence as a vehicle for Schwarzenegger. Basically, I think a producer was trying to work out how to turn this guy into a star and stumbled across the Conan comics. And you look at the cover, you know, the Frank Frazetta.
Oh my God, yeah.
It basically looks like Arnie. And in fact, I think Milia said during the shoot that if Arnold didn't exist, we'd have to invent him for this film. It really is the perfect alignment of star and property. So yeah, I guess that impossible figure did exist in the form of Conan art. He does look pretty much like for like.
He's a human Frank Frazetta painting.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, he absolutely is. Frank Frazetta was obsessed with human muscular curvature, and the whole film reflects the universe of a Frank Frazetta painting.
Absolutely. And Milius is a very kind of interesting guy. I'll talk about him a little bit more in recommendations, but he's clearly someone who's into like weaponry and bombast and all that kind of stuff. But he also has a philosophical edge to him, which is a really weird and interesting combination, and it's led to his very unique contributions to cinema as a whole. But with Conan, I really do think it's the perfect match between a guy's interest and attitude and a property. He didn't know Conan going into this. It's not like he was a Conan super geek. But what he did know was war and weaponry. and the concept of the Übermensch, forging a human as one would forge a weapon. And the film opens with a quote from Nietzsche, and this from the guy who had helicopters blasting Wagner in Apocalypse Now. So.
Oh, yeah, that's such a fascinating thing, this dynamic between Milius and Oliver Stone, who co-wrote Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
So Milius, of course, adapted Heart of Darkness into Apocalypse Now, which is also very Nietzschean. And then we have Oliver Stone, who actually went to Vietnam and was awarded the Purple Heart.
Mm-hmm.
And Milius, who was a student at the time and also had asthma, but wanted to go to Vietnam and didn't. And the Nietzsche quote at the beginning is so interesting, but the fact that they co-wrote this extremely, almost more playful approach to a war film, they take so many different philosophies. They pull from all kinds of mythologies. Mm. There's Egyptian mythology with the snakes. There's Prometheus, there's Hercules, there's Norse mythology all over the place here, but with a fundamental heartbeat, this question, this philosophical underpinning, what is the secret of the steel?
Well, that's actually really interesting because you have inspired a connection that I've actually never thought about before, but this idea of Milius wanting to go to Vietnam and not being able to. Can you imagine how pissed off he was with all of the hippies that were protesting Vietnam?
Oh,
he would have been surrounded by all of these flower children. And, you know, Conan is basically mowing down hippies for half the movie.
You nailed it. Yeah, exactly. I totally noticed that, too. I started singing the Flower People song from Spinal Tap when it came onto the screen.
Yeah, and that Nietzsche quote, it's about what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. But the movie makes me think of another Nietzsche quote, which is God is dead, or should I say Crom is dead, because Conan's God seems pretty useless to Conan. And Milius seems to have a lot to say about religion in the movie. You've got the kind of cults, the crucifixion, and the critiques of hippies. But then, you know, of course, Conan does actually pray to Crom at one point, and it's a bit of a turning point in the movie.
Crom, I've never prayed to you before. I have no tongue for it. No one, not even you, will remember if we were good men or bad, why we fought or why we died. No. All that matters is that two stood against many. That's what's important. Balor pleases you, Crom. So grant me one request. Grant me revenge. And if you do not listen, then the hell with you.
From moment one, we're looking at a sword being forged out of fire, very much like Prometheus stealing the fire from the gods. And speaking of Prometheus, I see a lot of parallel with Conan and Frankenstein.
Oh,
I never would have thought that until watching it this last time around, but they're both literary figures. They've been extensively adapted in pop culture. They've been in comics and film, and they're also written vastly different from how they appear in film.
Yeah.
Conan is more of an adventurer in the books. The creature was more articulate. Both had intelligence in the books that isn't necessarily on the screen. And Conan and the creature were both shaped by dysfunctional societies, and they were both very naive.
Yeah.
Like Conan's iconic "What is best in life?" statement was made really early in his reign, and his answer is pretty uncooked, only seasoned by his experience as a killing machine.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women. That is good. That is good.
The Prometheus myth is also really strong with both. There's just a lot of parallels.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I guess Conan could be seen as a bit of an empty vessel, much like the creature upon creation. They're both characters that really, really evolve over the course of the narrative, not just, you know, in terms of personality, but like their souls. And Conan the Barbarian was conceived to be part one of a 12-part franchise. Oliver Stone saw it as being the first of 12 movies. It was conceived to be a James Bond style affair with Arnie coming back every year. I think that probably would have taken it closer to the adventure mold. Certainly Conan the Destroyer, which is also on this disc, kind of tries that, but not necessarily very successfully. It had none of the weight of the original, and obviously Milius didn't return for that one. And the Po-faced majesty was lost. I still would like to see King Conan, which is promised at the end of the first movie, spoiler alert, but maybe that incredible shot of Arnie on the throne is enough to spark the imagination. You know, maybe too much time has passed, but I could still see an older Arnie on the throne as King Conan. Come on, guys, make it happen. What else about this movie sparked your imagination, Shay?
I love the set pieces and the predicaments that Conan finds himself in, like the Wheel of Pain in the beginning, where he's perpetually walking in a circle, ostensibly from a child into a full-blown muscle-bound adult. And it reminded me a lot of Sisyphus, mm-hmm. rolling the rock uphill forever and getting stronger and stronger, except he's able to break free in a way that Sisyphus isn't. And then he finds himself at one point crucified on a tree, fighting off vultures in the same way that Prometheus was. Mm-hmm. And like, all of these parallels with mythology are so interesting. And we haven't really talked about his companions yet. So
right.
He does meet some people along the way. And one in particular is that of Valeria, played by Sandow Bergman. And she was a dancer, apparently. She was cast because of her ability to express emotion and strength in a physical way. And boy, does she ever. She is such a fascinating character. She's also the person who ultimately brings Conan into the knowledge that he seeks. And I really loved that, because Thulsa Doom, another person we haven't discussed really, played by James Earl Jones, in one of the most iconic villain performances of the 80s. I mean, we all think about Star Wars, of course, but I think that this might be his crown jewel. Mm-hmm. He's so intense, even with that hair. That insane wig. Mm-hmm. His eyes are amazing, and he manipulates flesh in the same way that Conan would manipulate steel. Mm-hmm. And there's something relating those two things. It's too much of a spoiler for me to tell you what I think it is, but ultimately Valeria reveals to him what he is looking for.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And yeah, she's not a damsel in distress. You know, he doesn't throw her over his shoulder. If anything, she's throwing him over her shoulder and running off. So I just loved her character. And the fact that she was a criminal is also really interesting to me, because these characters are, again, in the vein of spaghetti western, they're all complex. They're all good and bad, and the ugly and the handsome. They're kind of everything. And Thulsa Doom is the ultimate sadist. He's like a sex maniac. He's crawling with snakes. Even the tower itself looks like a giant phallic object.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's 100% a sex cult.
I mean, all the way. Yeah. He has this laissez-faire detachment from the absolute chaos he's wreaking around him. Like, he's waltzing through these scenarios just, you know, snapping his fingers, and people jump off of cliffs for him. And he's terrifying. He's the perfect villain for this movie.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely. Very kind of, it's a weird performance. Like, it's almost camp, like, especially at the start when, spoiler alert, you know, this happens in the first 10 minutes, where he kills Conan's mum. There's that moment where he gives her a cold look, but then almost like a camp look over the shoulder as he turns around. Like, it's very, very unique choice by James Earl Jones. Very, very sinister. But yeah, let's move on to the extras, because this is a really stacked set. Really, really incredible extras. The archive commentary is one that I've loved for many, many years. It appeared on the DVD release of Conan, and it is absolutely hilarious. It's Milius and Arnie, and while Milius is kind of waxing philosophical, Arnie is basically pointing out what's happening on the screen, which includes randomly reading out the opening credits. It is an accidentally hilarious double act. You've got the straight man and the idiot, no offense, Arnie. Shut up! It's very, very entertaining. And meanwhile, there's a new commentary on this disc as well, created for this release by Paul M. Salmon. And it is astonishing from the very first moment, taking the movie right back to Robert E. Howard's writing, before revealing Paul was actually on the set of the original Conan the Barbarian. So his perspective is pretty much unmatchable outside of the cast and crew. And yeah, this opening really epitomizes the level of insight on this commentary. Really smart, relevant, and very thoughtful. Salmon understands and deeply cares about this film. He's written a book about Conan, the movies, and yeah, wonderful, wonderful commentary. There's also an incredible, definitive, hour-long documentary about the making of the movie with amazing interviews full of honesty, and it starts right at the conception of the project as a vehicle for Arnie, as I mentioned earlier. But maybe my favourite extra is the isolated score. It is one of the best film scores of all time, with no doubt. You know, we mentioned Wagner in Apocalypse Now. They could have been blasting this score and it would have had the same level of impact. Shay has it on vinyl, so we've listened to this around the house
cleaned,
quite a lot.
I cleaned the house so good when I had that on.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just really, really fantastic to listen to as an isolated score. As with The Warriors, there's just something really special about watching the silent imagery play out while listening to this incredible, incredible music. Yeah, like I say, it's a packed and stacked set. It is basically every single extra ever associated with this movie and more. You know, there's new stuff on here from Arrow. It's a fan's dream. It really is. Like, this is one where Arrow have given a film that some people look down on, the Criterion treatment, and it elevates this movie. It really does feel like it deserves all of this attention.
People do consider this to be a cheesy classic, and I have to say it is in some ways, but it gets in your blood in the way a really good Iron Maiden or Manowar song does. It gets your blood flowing. It makes you feel primal things. Mm. And I think Milius, being such a fan of the military and such a fan of warfare, injected intentionally such a deep level of philosophy. I think this is a romance film in disguise.
Right, yeah.
And I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the term bromance, but I think this might be one of the first really heavy bromantic movies.
Right.
And I was driving down the road one day, maybe 10 years ago, and saw that a local re-rent theater was playing Conan the Barbarian. I literally hit my brakes and did a U-turn and pulled into the parking lot, and I saw it on the big screen, and I would do it again.
Heck yeah.
Amazing film, absolutely worth the full treatment, and Arrow really outdid themselves with this beautiful release. I mean, it looked alive in a way I've never seen. Like,
absolutely,
the reds are so insane. The fire is dancing off of the television screen. There are these red glowing lights coming out of caves and drawing Conan into the underworld, where he's going to seek some kind of knowledge or get something important and bring it back up to the surface. It feels very, I don't know, just, it's like a new mythology.
What really struck me about the 4K transfer was, sometimes with these kinds of movies, when you make them kind of look this pin sharp and clear, it can make them look, you know, worse. It can make the costumes look worse. It can look, make the props look cheaper. But actually, it had the complete opposite effect for me. I've always thought the snake staff looked a bit kind of shit when I watched it on VHS and DVD. But here it looks like real. Like, everything here feels like we're watching a history play out, as opposed to, you know, just another movie. It kind of puts me in mind of Peter Jackson's approach to the Lord of the Rings stuff, where they're creating a real world.
Oh, it's such a beautiful thing, because the film really is going for that Frank Frazetta look. So you're seeing like the strokes of the brush in this release, like you're really getting down into those details.
Yeah.
And the more details, the better. For this one, it's such a fantastic release. What a movie. Put it on, put the soundtrack on, clean your house. Your mind will be blown.
Wield your broom like a steel sword. Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to recommendations based on the movie. I'm gonna go first with one that Shay hasn't seen. That is Milius from 2013. Now, we touched on it a little bit. Conan director John Milius is a controversial figure thanks to his right-wing macho leanings in the mostly left-wing film industry. And this documentary doesn't really interrogate those attitudes, which is a shame. But it is an example of artists reaching across the aisle to celebrate talent. Love him or loathe him, Milius has made some of the most important contributions to the concept of action cinema as art, of which Conan is an example. But he also, you know, he wrote the USS Indianapolis speech in Jaws, which is incredible. He wrote the entirety of Apocalypse Now and Dirty Harry, of which you can probably see some of his kind of opinions. His work does have a very significant legacy. And if you love Conan, this documentary is a fascinating examination of that legacy. Conan co-writer Oliver Stone appears, as does Schwarzenegger, with Scorsese, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, Paul Schrader, Clint Eastwood, Michael Mann, Kathy Kennedy, Harrison Ford, and Sly Stallone, all showing up amongst many, many other icons.
Anyone else?
but be warned, this documentary hasn't aged well. There's more to be offended by in the first 2 minutes than in the entirety of Conan. So this definitely wouldn't be made like this today. But if you can get past that, I do recommend Milius. It's a fascinating examination of a true original. There is no one else like John Milius working today. And yeah, I recommend it.
That sounds incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about something that's maybe equally as controversial. So if the philosophy of Conan were a bit more Eastern, maybe a bit more biblical, and laced with a heavy dose of acid, you'd have Alejandro Jodorowsky's El Topo, 1970. This is a psychedelic, violent, and possibly upsetting Western. It's really an expression of Jodorowsky's personal search for meaning. The main character in El Topo is a Django-like drifter played by Jodorowsky himself. And very much like Conan, he's brought up in a violent world. He solves his problems with violence, which in turn leads to an awakening. And his experience is almost parallel to Conan in a lot of ways. He takes what he wants. He's sent on a dangerous mission. El Topo has far more complex and deeply spiritual ramifications, where you can take nothing at face value. This is one of his weirdest, his heaviest, and strangest films, which is saying something, but it's fascinating, it's tragic, it's strangely beautiful. And it's also been reissued by Arrow.
Yeah, it's in the box set. Excellent. Yeah, great choice. We're gonna go from the sublime to the ridiculous now, because my next recommendation is Flight of Dragons. I thought about doing Hercules and the Haunted World, but I feel like Flight of Dragons is a little bit more underrated. It's another fantasy villain role for James Earl Jones in this truly underrated 80s animation. He plays the most evil wizard ever, and he's clearly having a great time chewing the voiceover booth like it's made of magic ham. It's got a great science versus magic setup and really, really wonderful characters. Like, it's clearly a massive ripoff of Lord of the Rings, but with many, many, many more dragons. Flight of Dragons, I do recommend it. Shay, what's last from you?
I'm going to recommend a film that is raising a sword not to Conan, but the Sandahl Bergman Valeria character.
Ooh.
And yeah, Sword and Sandahl Bergman. I'm sorry, I had to say it. She delivers such a graceful and strong performance and does guide Conan to his ultimate destiny, turning the damsel in distress trope on its ear and inspiring an entire subgenre of female-centric barbarian movies, such as Avi Nesher's She, also starring Sandahl Bergman, Jack Hill's Sorceress, and probably most famously, Red Sonja, which also has Arnold and Sandahl, but in particularly, Brigitte Nielsen. But one of my personal favorites, one of my most guilty pleasures, is Matt Simber's Hundra. So, have you seen that one?
Oh, no.
All right. Yeah, for context, Matt Simber was the co-founder and the mastermind behind GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. That was a mid-80s televised all-lady wrestling series that was broadcast out of a Las Vegas casino. He made this film in close proximity to filming the pilot, so you might say that Hundra was a primer to what eventually he became most known for.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Towering blonde Laureen Landon, who's the star of The Incredible Maniac Cop Part 2,
oh, yeah.
also an Arrow release, plays Hundra, the chosen one in a tribe that has cast out all the men. And in order for her clan to survive an attack, Hundra must reproduce. So she adventures to choose a mate. Hundra walks a fine line somewhere between being incredibly misguided and mistaking female independence for male fantasy, but it's sometimes incredibly funny and silly and genuinely fun with an absolutely epic set of battles and slow-mo swordplay set to a stirring soundtrack by, drumroll, Ennio Morricone.
Oh, wow. Holy shit. Yeah, that sounds incredible. Really, really fun. I love it. All right. Well, some very intriguing recommendations there for everyone. And let's move on to recommendations based on what we've been watching over the past couple of weeks. I only have one this week, Precious Arrowheads, but Shay's here to save the day with a couple of recommendations. I'm going to throw you to the wolves first.
Okay.
Even though you just did a recommendation off the back of the movie.
Yeah.
I've only got one, so I need you to sandwich me.
I can sandwich you.
Perfect.
I can be the bread. That's fine. So I revisited a documentary that I really love. It's called Vernon, Florida.
Mm.
It's by Errol Morris. It's really early in his career. And the backstory is really fascinating. So he made The Gates of Heaven, and with some money from Werner Herzog, he decided to move into a small town in Vernon, Florida, where he'd heard that people were cutting off their limbs to receive insurance paid outs.
Oh, wow.
So he was interviewing these people, and the working title was Nub City. Not a great name. And big surprise, the locals didn't like it. And after being chased by a truck and receiving death threats, they changed the name of their documentary and their entire approach. And instead, they decided to focus on the colorful and quirky residents and their unique ways of life. Most of the residents of this town are over the age of 70. And it's a real slice of life documentary, but not a boring one. He's capturing a time and a place that will never be again. And it really felt like a eulogy to these really bizarre and hilarious and truly heartwarming characters. This is available on Criterion along with the majority of Morris's documentaries,
yeah.
which I have to recommend actually all of his documentaries.
Oh, yeah.
They're fantastic.
Absolutely. He's a master. Absolutely. The master. Well, speaking of masters, my solo recommendation is actually one that you can see in UK cinemas. It came out just over a week ago in the UK. And yeah, I loved director Corey Ader's Shoplifters. It's a film I still think about very often. And his latest movie, Monster, is equal to it. It starts out feeling like we need to talk about Kevin meets Mother, but then it goes into a completely different but beautiful and logical direction, which I'm obviously not going to spoil. This is a film full of twists and turns. But yeah, Corey Ader has always been great at directing children, but the performances are truly next level in this one. The acting adds so much power. Brilliant script too, with a masterful flashback structure that has a Rashomon feel. Wonderful, wonderful movie with one of my all-time favorite final moments. Please go and see this in cinemas. You will be enraptured by this stunning, stunning movie. Monster, I recommend it.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And speaking of movies to go see, we really want to go see Late Night with the Devil.
Yes.
Yeah. That put me in the mood to watch Stay Tuned again from 1992. Remember that one?
Oh, yes.
Yep. John Ritter getting sucked into a satellite TV, sold to him by an emissary of Satan himself, played by Jeffrey Jones. And yeah, Ritter and his wife, played by Pam Dauber, have to survive these twisted parodies and demented quiz shows and deadly cartoons for 24 hours in order to make it back to the world of the flesh. It's an extremely clever concept and a big entry in the subgenre of people getting sucked into things that they shouldn't be in, like the Dungeon Master or Inner Space.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely worth a watch. Maybe watch it as a pre-show for Late Night with the Devil. Top it off with Videodrome as a chaser.
There you go. Yeah, that's a really interesting one because Stay Tuned, I haven't watched it for a while. You watched this one on your own. But I did see it at the cinema, and from memory, it does feel like what I've seen of Late Night with the Devil as one of the fake TV shows in the Stay Tuned universe. That's a really nice...
Definitely.
Nice recommendation. So, yeah, that is it for this week. But I do want to, before we go, say a special thank you. So I apologized at the start. I'm going to say a thank you at the end. Joe Higgins sent Shay and I a stack of really, really cool comics with a very moving note. It really, really genuinely meant a lot to both of us, and I'm sure it'll mean a lot to Dan too. I will read it to Dan when we record next time. But yeah, really, really appreciate it, Joe. The comics are amazing, and I'm looking forward to reading all of them, especially the Mr. Blobby horror comic.
Oh my God.
Believe it or not, Shay is aware of Mr. Blobby.
I have a Mr. Blobby 45 RPM record, and it's terrifying. You play it slow, you'll never sleep again.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the comics are really special, but it's actually the note that you included with the comics that really had an impact on Shay and I. It's stuff like that that really, really keeps us going. So, you know, thank you for listening to Arrow. Thank you for listening to VHS Quest. And thank you for the really, really kind package.
I love zines and I love horror film art. I just love to get lost in those little books. And we have a lot of really fun reading ahead of us. And
absolutely,
the
yeah.
note was really moving. Thank you so much, Joe.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. All right. Well, social media, Shay. How can people follow you?
People can find me on Instagram under the VHS distribution company that I run and label. It's called Black Video, but spelled with two V's. The video. That's Black _ VVIDEO. And I'm also on Facebook under Shay Mossifin.
There you go, Shay Mossifin. I am Sam Ashurst, and you can find me at Goodreads, where I'm reading a lot of horror at the moment, having a lot of fun with that. You can also find me on Instagram, SamAshurst23, the number 3, but I've stopped posting on there, essentially. I'm also not really posting on Twitter anymore, and same goes for Facebook. They'll probably get deleted soon, so...
What about Letterboxd?
Letterboxd, again, abandoned.
Not
it.
Really. I
no,
am, kind of.
But Sam Ashurst on Letterboxd. I may pop up on there at some point.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know.
I'm just over
I hope you
the
do.
Internet.
I love your reviews, though.
Oh, thank you,
They're
Shay.
So fun.
Thank you, Shay.
Keep
All
doing
right.
it.
All right. Well, with that bombshell, we are going to say goodbye. Any final thoughts on Conan, Shay?
No, I'm just going to go crush my enemies and see them driven before me and hear the lamentation of their women now.
There you go. All right. Well, on that note, thank you so much for listening. We promise to be more professional next time when Dan will return for Robot Jocks.
Ooh!
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.